Chapter 27, Alburnus Castle. Stavius, Elisa, and Larsa reached Alburnus Castle while the battle was raging. There had been no more patrols on their way, but that was not the case at their destination. Soldiers filled the structure with more pouring out of every entrance as they entered the courtyard. The enemy was attacking the three rebels on too many fronts, and Larsa quickly asked whether Stavius and Elisa could handle the courtyard soldiers. They assured her they could, and the vampire disappeared in a puff of smoke. Moments later, they heard crashes and screams from inside the castle, and Stavius silently wished he could teleport like her. Stavius pushed that last thought out of his mind as the soldiers resumed their attack. The two heroes became a blur of karate blocks, kicks, and punches. Elisa struck two soldiers with her stave in a whirling motion which knocked them to the ground, causing the four soldiers beside them to pause their attack. Stavius tossed a lightning bolt toward three attackers from another direction. The lightning exploded at their feet and threw them to the ground. The soldiers retreated a minute or two later, and the two heroes took a moment to catch their breaths and to savor their victorious feeling. That sensation quickly dissipated as they looked up and understood the real reason for the soldiers' withdrawal. A heavily armored banker had entered the courtyard. He was radiating power, and the air throbbed around him with energy. The banker shouted, "Prepare to die!" and thrust his arms toward Elisa. Stavius dove in front of his friend and caught the blast full on his chest.
Their cheers turned into silence a minute later when the smoke cleared, and they saw Stavius standing and absorbing the banker's energy.
The banker's confident smile faded as he blasted Stavius again and again with no effect. Then panic began flowing over his face as he realized he couldn't stop his final attack. Stavius was no longer just absorbing his lightning bolt. The prophecy hero had taken a hold of the blast and was actively draining the banker's energy. The banker tried to pull away, to no avail. He tried to run, but his feet wouldn't budge. Within seconds, his brilliantly colored armor faded to a dull gray, and he could barely stand. Stavius released the banker from his hold before he was utterly drained and watched the confused wizard struggle to remain upright. Then the boy released a fraction of the energy he'd absorbed at the terrified man. The soldiers soon witnessed one of the strongest wizards they had ever known lying on the ground, naked and shaking with fear. Stavius's blast had vaporized his precious armor and reduced the pavement around him to a pile of rubble. Stavius lifted his gaze to the remaining troops and growled, "Okay, who's next?" The soldiers took one look at the whimpering banker and another at Stavius, who was surrounded by air shimmering with incredible amounts of magical power before fleeing as quickly as they could. Larsa had finished with the inside guards and watched the final scene from the castle entrance.
"Well, that was impressive. I have never seen anything like that in my 500 years of life," she uttered with genuine astonishment.
"That was gentle," Stavius offhandedly replied. "You should have seen what I did to the first banker I deposed. She really pissed me off."
Larsa had heard rumors of Stavius's battle with the banker at the slave camp, but assumed they were exaggerations. The centuries-old vampire felt something she hadn't experienced in a very long time as she realized the rumors were true. She felt a combination of awe and fear. This boy was much more potent than anyone she knew, and yet he was unsure of his abilities. Larsa knew she was standing in front of possibly the most dangerous person in the world, and it both excited and terrified her.
"Let's go get the talisman," said Elisa as she took Stavius's hand.
"You two go up, and I'll keep the riffraff from following," offered Larsa as she positioned herself, blocking the only entrance to the castle tower. Elisa and Stavius raced across the courtyard and up the tower stairs. They knew where to find the Crown of Helios altar because King and Queen Alburnus made sure everyone knew.
All seven families displayed their power and wealth with outrageously designed castles and lavish parties. The Alburnus family was, however, the most excessive.
Castle Alburnus boasted a spacious courtyard surrounded by five stories of banquet halls, private residences, guest suites, offices, and numerous other rooms and venues. The far end of the castle, overlooking the river, contained a massive tower rising another 10 stories above the highest castle parapet. This hollow, seven-sided tower was 100 feet in diameter, with a myriad of long, slender windows and a stone staircase which wrapped along the interior walls from the floor to the top. The Crown of Helios altar was centered on the top floor atop a freestanding 10-foot-wide crystal pillar rising the full 15 stories.
The crystal pillar glowed with a shimmering rainbow of colors as magical energy pulsed between the ground and the crown. Colored light radiated out the window slits so that the entire tower became a giant lantern. It cast a soft, ever-changing light show over much of the city every night. The Crown of Helios was so inaccessible and so heavily guarded that Clan Auburnus were not concerned about its prominent display.
The Crown of Helios was high above them, supported by the glowing crystal pillar. The two heroes felt the enormous power emanating from both during their spiraling ascent to the lofty top floor of the tower. Elisa and Stavius were gasping for air by the time they burst out onto the open terrace at the building's pinnacle and leaned on the low wall running along the seven sides. They paused for a moment to gaze at the altar space. The floor was 100 feet in diameter and covered in gleaming white marble. Priceless statues of the gods and Auburnus family members stood in artful poses scattered throughout the space. Clan Auburnus were not at all hesitant to place themselves at the same level as the gods. The Crown of Helios rested on a slender pedestal in the center of the terrace, where a tall woman stood contemplating it with her back to the new arrivals. Elisa decided it was time to go and started to dash toward the woman, but Stavius quickly grabbed her hand and yanked her back.
"Hey, what the heck? That hurt my shoulder!" yelped Elisa.
Stavius whispered, "You would have felt much worse if you had fallen. There's no floor in front of us. It's an illusion." Elisa clung to her friend, unable to move or stop shaking. "What do you mean?" The woman turned to face them. She answered, "He means that the altar is on an island supported by the crystal pillar. It is surrounded by a 10-foot gap when the floor is retracted. The illusion, however, is perfect. Only an animal would see through it."
"Hi, Mom. It's nice to see you, too," grumbled Stavius.
"Well, it appears that your handicap has finally helped you after all these years. I imagine that Lord and Lady Auburnus would have liked you to be here earlier. Their screams echoed all the way down. It was most disquieting to me during my morning meditation."
Elisa's eyes widened in terror as she whispered, "She's your mother?"
Clarice chortled, "Weren't you with another trollop the last time we met?" Stavius blushed and whispered to Elisa, "That was Janice." Elisa blushed as well and said, "Yeah, I figured." "No, I don't believe that was her name, but it doesn't matter, boy. Even you cannot ruin this most auspicious day. Your childish attempt to steal the Crown of Helios is futile, but at least you will have a fabulous view of your accomplice's destruction." Stavius and Elisa spun around toward the battle raging across the river and understood Clarice's statement. The Septumculums surrounded the Latian army. It was only a matter of time before the Latians were defeated. Stavius felt crushed already. All their efforts to fulfill the prophecy were wasted. Clarice cackled, "By nightfall, the other families will have perished as well, and I will have the jewels of Luna and the Ring of the Air in my possession. Oh, and don't worry, I will retrieve the others in good time. You have sent them far away, but I can track them far better than you can imagine." "I must admit that I was mistaken about you, boy. When you were born, I hoped that you would be a powerful enough wizard to help me destroy the families and collect all the talismans. I was, of course, deeply disappointed with your retarded abilities. However, it turns out that your misguided attempts have helped me attain my dreams despite your embarrassing condition." Stavius sat on the floor muttering, "You're welcome, Mom," as Elisa grabbed the rucksack from him. Elisa angrily remarked, "I am not giving up. There has to be something in here we can use." The girl pulled out a knife, a rope, the mostly depleted dragonstones, Ops's magical map, and a book before turning the bag upside down and shaking out the remaining odds and ends.
"Hey, look! Fruit roll-ups! I can't believe my aunt's been holding out on us. It's like my mom's purse without her keys and water bottle," muttered Stavius as he stuffed some of the dried fruit in his mouth.
"I don't use a purse," complained Clarice. "He wasn't talking about you," snarled Elisa as she pulled a water bottle out of a side pocket.
"Is that my sister's map? I remember making that with her when we were little girls. It was great for sneaking out of the house, but it won't help you much here," laughed Clarice. She had forgotten about her important business and conjured up a comfy chair to watch the kids. Elisa wasn't as convinced that the map wouldn't help, but Stavius motioned her to stop before she unrolled it.
"Elisa, this isn't going to be useful. It's just going to make a hole in the floor with nothing below us for 100 feet, sighed Stavius. Clarice was enjoying their struggle and added, "It's more like a 200-foot drop, but your point is well made. Besides, a primitive creature like you can't see it, but there is a spherical shield surrounding the altar."
Oh, we can see it. It extends about halfway into the gap between your floor and ours. That thing is radiating so much energy that it's impossible to miss, grumbled Stavius. This startled Clarice. Her son was right, of course. The powerful shield radiated swirling red, blue, orange, and black colors, much like a soap bubble in sunlight. She just did not expect him to be able to see it. Clarice chuckled. Yes, the talisman's energy powers my shield. Nothing can penetrate it, not even Tessup's precious map. Her magical contrivance is strong, but it can't go through magical shields, and there is no way over, under, or around mine. Something happened on the distant battlefield at that moment, and Clarice rose and walked to the far side of her platform for a better look. Elisa started to put the map away, but Stavius touched her arm and silently sent her a thought. I have a crazy idea which might work, but you'd better tie that rope to something secure in case I'm wrong.
Elisa quickly tied one end of the rope to a massive marble statue of some long-dead Auburnus patriarch as Stavius tied the other end around his waist. He turned the map toward the altar and instructed Elisa to keep the tunnel open while he grabbed the talisman and to help pull him back when he had it.
Stavius silently pointed at the parabolic equation Ops had written on her map to create a tunnel under the shield of the slave camp. It curved 5 feet deep and came out on the other side 32 feet away using the equation y equals 5 times the quantity x divided by 16 minus 1 squared minus 5. Elisa looked at her friend as though he had lost his mind and muttered, but Clarice just explained why Ops's map is not going to work. It can't tunnel through a magical shield, and even if it could, you'd fall through this floor. You'd end up swinging at the end of your rope as soon as you jumped in. Stavius grinned and said, I never thought I would use the stuff we learned in Club S&M. Miss Dada will be so proud. Then he rewrote the equation to be y equals the quantity 2 times the quantity x divided by 15 minus 1 squared minus 2 times I. Elisa was confused. She said, I get that you just change some factors and multiply the equation by an imaginary number, but what good is that? Stavius answered, well, the entire equation isn't imaginary. Everything multiplied by 0 is 0, which is a real number. Therefore, this equation contains real numbers when x equals 0 and 30. Elisa whispered, so you think a hole will appear here and another one 30 feet away, and you plan on crawling down a 2-foot-deep tunnel through imaginary space to pop out in real space over there by the talisman? Yep, the tunnel won't need to pass through the shield because it won't be in the real world until the other end, answered Stavius. You are insane, hissed Elisa. Nah, I'm wearing a rope, joked Stavius in an attempt to mask his fear. Power it up and let's give it a try. Just be ready to pull me out if anything goes wrong. Elisa enchanted the map despite her misgivings. Moments later, a square hole appeared beside them as another appeared near the center of the altar. Clarice failed to notice the holes as she angrily shouted at the battle in the distance. Stavius dove into the hole while his mother was distracted and disappeared. Elisa saw the rope steadily vanish into the hole behind her friend, but he didn't appear to be falling. Less than a minute later, he popped out near the talisman altar inside the shield. The tunnel was not what Stavius expected at all. It was like sliding through a reflective silver tube. The shaft only sunk a couple of feet, so it was easier to navigate than the deeper passage under the slave camp shield. Moreover, it was incredibly slick, so he slid the entire length of the tube with one firm shove when he entered. He was as surprised as Elisa that his plan worked and stood dumbfounded by the podium which held the crown of Helios for a moment after he climbed out. The sound of his exit caught his mother's attention, though, and she quickly spun around to confront the intruder. Stavius saw the stainless steel spear flying toward his heart just in time to raise a shield. The projectile dissolved into a spray of marble dust, but the force of its impact knocked the young man off his feet. Mom! Stavius yelled before rolling to his left as a massive battle axe crashed into the floor, mere inches from his head. He scrambled to his feet as Clarice struggled to free the weapon from the cracked tile floor. What are you doing? I'm your son! Stavius screamed. I know exactly who and what you are, you filthy beast! Screamed Clarice as she threw a handful of knives at the boy. She had given up on freeing her axe and decided to transform it into other weaponry. Stavius easily dodged three of the knives, which went over the edge and exploded upon striking the shield outside. He blocked the other two with small hand shields and stared at this deranged woman. Why? He asked in disbelief. Why? she screamed. "You tried to destroy everything I've spent my life attempting to achieve, and you dare to ask why? You are even more stupid than I thought! I have been striving to become the most powerful wizard in the most powerful family ever since I was a child. I've suffered through working for these lazy fools for years, waiting for my chance. Now, four of our rivals are powerless. I have deposed King and Queen Auburnus, and I will have all three remaining talismans by nightfall. I am attempting to ensconce Familia Claricia as the sole rulers of Septumculus tonight, and you are trying to ruin it." Claricia hadn't been idly chatting. She had transformed the marble bust of some hapless ancient member of the Auburnus clan into a gleaming sword during her tirade and was circling Stavius. Stavius was unarmed since he still had no magical skills, but he hoped his shield abilities would protect him. "You aren't going to kill your own flesh and blood," he said with more hope than conviction. "Possibly not, but I am certainly going to try," Claricia shouted as she lunged at her son. Stavius sidestepped her thrust and countered with a fist glowing with magical power. The sword's blade snapped off, but the force of her blow twisted his arm. He stumbled back as his shoulder throbbed in pain and realized she had driven him to the edge of the platform. "Hey, you're trying to knock me off this thing," he yelled. "I am so proud that you managed to figure that out. Perhaps you aren't as stupid as I thought. But it is time to end this," Claricia growled as she thrust her arms forward and let loose a lightning bolt of energy. "No," screamed Stavius as he rolled to his right and tossed up a quick shield. Claricia's energy bolt glanced off his shield, but began ricocheting off the inside of the energy shield surrounding the altar. It seemed to increase in power with every strike, and Stavius feared it would knock one of them over the edge or hit the talisman itself. He quickly stood up to absorb the bolt's energy with his chest. The power was incredible, and Stavius was woozy by the time it had entered his body entirely. His mother stared at her son with disgust. "Now, Staven, you will die as you should have died so many years ago. I should never have let you live once I learned of your inadequacy. But I was too soft back then. Goodbye and good riddance." Claricia raised both arms, arched her back, and thrust her body forward with every erg of energy she could muster. Stavius saw the insane expression on her face as she attacked and witnessed the utter hate inside her soul. The boy reached out to accept his mother's blast, but did not reflect at this time. Instead, he grabbed it and greedily drew it inside his body. He was prepared and sucked every bit of energy she threw at him. She eventually realized the futility of her attack and tried to stop, but Stavius would not relinquish his hold. The 17-year-old kept pulling the energy from his deranged mother. Her facial expression melted from greed and hate to fear and then to abject terror. This stupid, handicapped child who was more beast than human had depleted her magical energy and was sucking out her life force. Stavius was almost blind with rage, but he had no desire to kill anyone, especially not his mother. He stopped and stared at the frail woman who had collapsed on the floor in front of him. Her forceful presence had vanished, and all that remained was the fractured shell of the woman he had feared all his life. "I'm sorry, Mom. I'm so sorry," muttered Stavius as he struggled to catch his breath. Claricia's strength might have ebbed, but her vengeful spirit returned in an instant. She spat at him and screamed, "You are sorry! You are pathetic! How could something like you have sprung from my body? You were never able to create anything with magic, but now you've managed to learn how to control it in its raw form, like the animal you are. You still cannot create anything. All you can do is destroy. You have no purpose, no future, and no reason to exist. You are an embarrassment to me and to everything human." Stavius felt as though her cutting remarks had physically slapped him. He yelled, "You are wrong, Mother. I am not that little boy you abandoned. I am Stavius. I am a prophecy hero, and one day I will become a god." Claricia laughed. "Well, your appearance is indeed less impressive than your statue, Stavius, hero of Septumculus. And might I add that you seem to have failed with the whole martyr concept as well. You can't even die properly, can you? But it doesn't matter. You are trapped within the shield without a way to cross the gap to the parapet. You will never get out, even if you could manage to remove the crown without blowing us up. Face it, kid. You've lost." Stavius glanced at the rope around his waist and realized his mother was correct about one thing. He was not going to get out the same way he came in. Elisa was only able to hold the tunnel spell for a few minutes, and there was no sign of his exit. The tunnel had severed his rope when it collapsed, and only a 6-foot length remained dangling from around his waist. Stavius untied the useless rope and studied his surroundings before replying. "I'm not worried about removing the talisman from the altar's power stream. I have plenty of experience with that. I'm also not too worried about the shield. Shields like this are built to keep things out rather than to keep them in.
Claritia scooched herself over to a statue and groaned as she leaned against the sculpted woman's cool, flowing marble dress. She smiled as she said,
"You might not find that to be true. I designed this shield, and it is a part of the same system protecting this entire city. The talisman directly powers my shield, and I assure you that the spell is well designed to prevent anything from passing in either direction."
Savius tugged a little power from the shield and could tell that Claritia was telling the truth. Claritia's spell was incredibly strong. It would be impossible to absorb if it was part of the central Septumculus shield, and Stavius believed that part of her claim as well. Claritia had, however, neglected to mention that they were on the same side of the shield as its power source. Stavius tentatively extended a thin tendril of magical power to the shield from one hand and a second stream to the talisman with his other. He smiled at his mother and asked, "Have you ever heard of a short circuit as the energy arced between the two elements?" Stavius shaped the energy beams so that they met in front of his body instead of coursing through him. He was able to step aside seconds later to watch as the now self-sustaining energy path grew in size. The shield began to pulse, and the colors began to swirl across it like oil shimmering on the surface of a pool of water. The colors swirled faster and faster until the shield became a milky white blur. This process continued for over a minute as the sphere surrounding them became more and more opaque until it appeared to be rigid and hard. The shield's surface lost its glossy sheen and developed an irregular matte finish, much like an egg. Then it exploded.
The explosion was not forceful or loud. The egg shield simply popped and fragmented into millions of small pieces, which turned to dust as they fell away. Suddenly, the two adversaries were exposed under the cloudy sky, which was threatening to rain at any moment.
Stavius turned his attention to the talisman, but he was too late. Claritia had somehow found the energy to stagger over to the altar and had grasped the crown of Helios in the energy stream.
"No!" screamed Stavius. "The stream will become unstable if you yank out the talisman. Let me do it properly, or you'll blow us both up."
Claritia chuckled a wicked laugh and said, "And why would I want you to have it? You want to steal my crown and use it to fulfill your prophecy. Well, what about my prophecy?"
Stavius was confused, but decided the best course of action was to keep her talking as he planned how to keep her from killing them both and destroying the talisman.
He asked, "What is your prophecy, Mother?"
Claritia's eyes glazed with a dreamy look as she answered, "Why, that one day all seven families and their talismans would be united into a single, infinitely powerful family to rule Septumculus and the world."
Stavius was afraid that approaching his mother would cause her to pull the crown out of the power flow, so he elected to keep her talking.
"It seems to me that you've been eliminating the other families rather than uniting them," he observed.
Claritia sighed.
"Yes, well, the goal of my prophecy is to have Familia Claritia be the one ruling family, regardless of how I attain it."
Stavius gulped as he finally comprehended his mother's ultimate objective, but she ignored him. She was stroking the crown in an almost loving manner.
"Did you know that I created this crown?" she asked. "I had been fascinated by the talismans as a young girl and studied them endlessly. Then one of your so-called prophecy heroes managed to steal the original crown of Helios. No one knew what to do until a small girl bravely approached the despondent king and proclaimed that she could recreate it. I doubt that anyone in the Auburnus family believed that I could, but I was a magical prodigy and there were no other alternatives. I spent years crafting this crown, harvesting stones from dozens of dragons and refining my work until it was a perfect recreation. I was given the title Shrirov Auburnus as a reward and became the most respected wizard in the city. I built the bridge across the river. I created the city's protective shield, which you just destroyed. And I nurtured my talisman as it matured and as its power grew."
Claritia was actively caressing the talisman now, and Stavius realized she felt more of a kinship to it than to him. He might be her biological son, but she believed the crown of Helios was her real child.
Stavius took a step toward his mother, and Claritia quickly spun around to face him. Her face was contorted into an insane and gleeful expression. Claritia snarled,
You think you have won, but you have won nothing. This crown is mine, and mine alone. You want to steal it from me, but I will never let that happen. If I cannot have it, then no one will.
The thought of losing her precious crown was too much for the old woman, and she suddenly grabbed the talisman and pulled it off the altar. Stavius knew that the entire tower would explode in minutes. He frantically tried to find a way out, even as he felt like retching after her mention of harvesting dragons. The young man wondered how many creatures had been chained, tortured, and murdered by these families. Clarice laughed at his desperate search and said,
"There is no way either of us can get far enough away from this place to survive. My ultimate satisfaction is knowing that you did not steal my crown and that I have corrected a mistake I made so many years ago. I just killed you, and there is no way you will be able to avoid dying this time."
Then Clarice Shrirov Abernus did something so unexpected that Stavius collapsed to his knees in disbelief. She slammed the crown of Helios onto the floor and bent it. It was damaged so much that it would never fit with the other talismans. But Clarice didn't stop. She smashed the talisman again and again until it twisted to a point where it broke in half. She picked up the pieces and threw one over the precipice into the darkness below. She embraced the other in her arms and began rocking back and forth as if cuddling a baby. The altar was about to explode, but Stavius didn't care. All the hero's hopes were gone. His dream was not supposed to end this way. But he felt such a crushing sense of defeat that he couldn't move. Stavius didn't care whether he lived or died. The prophecy was over. Civilization on his home world would end. Humanity and all other life on Earth would die. Their team had failed because he had failed. He didn't deserve to live anymore. Stavius closed his eyes and dropped his head as he waited for death to claim him. He wasn't sure what dying would feel like or whether he would have an afterlife after being destroyed by the impending explosion, but he was unprepared for what happened. The boy heard the altar crackle with one final power surge and felt a crushing pain as it exploded, and death lifted him up away from the physical world.
The heat from the explosion scorched him as he rose above the flames, but his death wasn't nearly as painful nor as quick as he had expected. Stavius tensed his body and tried hanging on to his memories of his mortal life as long as he could. A moment later, he was jarred out of his reverie by a soothing voice in his head advising him to not look down.
Of course, Stavius immediately opened his eyes and stared into the abyss below. He was flying 250 feet in the air over the battlefield south of the river with his head pointed straight toward the ground. Oily smoke and noxious fumes roiled in the air around them, and Stavius immediately puked.
"That's going to ruin somebody's day," chuckled a familiar voice.
"I'd say he's going to ruin a dozen people's days with the spread on that spray," chuckled another voice. Stavius twisted around to see Elisa riding on the back of Safe. The massive dragon was gripping him in her mighty talons. They hit a downdraft and fell 50 feet before Safe's mighty wings thrust them higher. Stavius's head was snapped back toward the ground, and he vomited again.
"That is completely disgusting," groaned Safe. "Cut it out, or you're going to make me hurl, too."
"You two are finished. I'm taking you back to the training cave." The dragon adjusted her grip on the boy, and his ride became smoother as she flew the two heroes south, but Stavius felt as though all the life had drained out of his body. Alburnus Castle and his mother were gone, and the entire hillside was ablaze. The battle on the cotton fields appeared to be over, but he did not see any victorious celebration. The place was somber and melancholy, almost as though neither side had won.
Everything he saw amplified the thoughts that looped through his mind. They had failed at everything. The Latians had lost the battle. Narayana and Versera were missing and probably dead. His mother had just killed herself in front of his eyes, and the crown of Helios was gone.
They could not fulfill the prophecy now, and Stavius's failure was the reason they were unable to complete it. There was no longer any hope. What would he tell the other heroes? What would he tell Janice? Stavius closed his eyes, let his body go limp, and sobbed.